I'm Dr. Leif Tapanola from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Today our guest is Mark Heinzman. He's the zoological curator at Northwest Trek Wildlife Park. We're talking about fishers, that's the furry mammal, and efforts to conserve these important critters. Peter, have you seen a fisher in the wild?
I have not seen a fisher in the wild, and they're absolutely one of the animals that not only would I like to see. When I first got here to Idaho, I reached out to all our fish and game areas and said, if you come across the fisher, we will build an exhibit ASAP to house it.
Yeah, they're really interesting animals, and we're going to learn a whole lot more about them today. I'm really excited, actually, because I know only a little about them. I bet our listeners only maybe have heard of them, but I doubt anyone's really seen one in the wild. They're just sort of an elusive creature.
Completely. And I think, too, the wolverine and badger tends to get more recognition than the fisher, and we need to bring that fisher up to the limelight that it deserves.
Today, the limelight shines brightly on the fisher. Well, first though, nature news.
Yeah, Leif, this is kind of fun. During the summer of 2020, there have been at least 40 incidences of orcas, otherwise known as killer whales, attacking yachts off the coast of Spain and Portugal.
Oh no, orcas attacking boats?
Attacking boats. Well, that's what the media is saying anyway.
Okay, attack.
And, yes. And of course, you know, when a killer whale comes up to a yacht and starts interacting with it, it can be somewhat frightening.
I bet.
For the people on the yachts. And with these encounters, they're lasting anywhere from 30 minutes to hours. You know, there was one instance where these whales were interacting with this yacht for almost 4 hours.
Jeez.
And they've been kind of looking at this, researchers, marine biologists, and they've realized that they are just three juvenile male orcas.
Okay.
And what they're doing is they're coming up underneath the boat, bumping into the boat, and the big thing is that they love to play with the rudder. And they'll grab the rudder and move the rudder, and they are turning boats. You know, they're turning them 180 degrees. And, you know, the hard part is because these interactions are scary, you know, the boat owners, the captains and the media really want to push, you know, attack, aggressive. And what these researchers are finding is that these three juvenile whales aren't being aggressive. They're pretty certain that they're just playing with the boats. There's, you know, orcas are insanely smart, super social critters, and they do have a lot of tendencies to have human-like actions and behaviors. You know, we don't want to anthropomorphize this, but these guys seem to be playing with the boats. And luckily, Portugal and Spain really aren't taking an aggressive approach with the three whales. They're just cautioning everyone not to kind of sail yachts along their coastline until the orcas, in a sense, grow up and get bored with playing the boats.
A cautionary tale when you're living among large, smart mammals.
Yeah. I mean, a big bull orca is the same size of an elephant. The last thing we want is elephant playing with our stuff.
A very different mammal that we're going to talk about today, the fisher. Our trivia question, of course, deals with that. Fishers are the primary predators of what animal? I think you'll be surprised. We're going to learn a whole lot more right after this break. Stay tuned.
This is KISU-FM Pocatello, Idaho Falls, Rexburg. Also available on your Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Welcome back. I want to welcome Mark Heinzman. He's the zoological curator at the Northwest Trek Wildlife Park in Washington State. We're talking about fishers. That's the furry mammal. So first off, thank you for joining us today on The Nature of Idaho.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Why don't you tell us about what is it you do for Northwest Trek?
Sure. So I am the zoological curator at Northwest Trek Wildlife Park, and that basically means that I manage the animal care department. So I am responsible for deciding what animals we have here, how many, how they're housed, how they're cared for, and then just generally overseeing the animal care staff that does the day-to-day work to provide such great care for our animals. And here at Northwest Trek, we are an AZA accredited facility, Association of Zoos and Aquariums, and we focus primarily on species that are native to the Pacific Northwest. So we have a whole variety going from very, very small animals to very, very large animals, up to the size of grizzly bears and moose.
Which is great. When you look at zoos across the United States, a facility that's strictly indigenous is actually quite rare. And as we are going to be talking later on about conservation efforts, you know, we have to always remember that conservation starts here at home in the United States. And Northwest Trek has an amazing and unique ability to really push that idea.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really like a lot about working at Northwest Trek, because I'm deeply passionate about living in the Pacific Northwest and all the things that make the Pacific Northwest great. And I feel like I kind of have the opportunity to not only work in the Pacific Northwest, but work at the Pacific Northwest, because our park overall is a great embodiment of what is so amazing about this region of the country. Because we're basically built right in the middle of a 700 acre forest. And we've got all the species that are scattered through this region that are just unlike any others you'll find in the country, and are really just pretty amazing animals.
So the wildlife park there is located in Tacoma, is that correct?
It's just outside of Tacoma by about 30 miles in a town called Eatonville. But the Tacoma, Seattle metro area is definitely what we're part of.
Did you grow up in that area?
No, I'm actually from the Midwest. I grew up in Illinois and moved out here about 5 years ago to start working here. I've worked in the zoo field basically since I graduated college. And so this is actually my third zoo, but it was really a desire to live in the Pacific Northwest that brought me here.
What drew you out here?
Well, I took a vacation out here now several years ago. And of course, I came out in July, which is like when you get the hard sell about life in the Pacific Northwest, because it's beautiful and sunny every day. And, you know, out here in Western Washington, Mount Rainier was looming large in the background of somehow everywhere you go. And so that kind of really just made me feel like this is where I want to be. I like it out here. You know, I'm a flatlander by birth growing up in the Midwest. And so having access to mountains and the coast really within a day's drive of one another is pretty incredible to me. The fact that it's green year round is pretty incredible to me. So just kind of all of the different parts of life here have been what I feel like is perfect for me. And so I'm pretty sure I'm not going anywhere. I'm a Pacific Northwesterner for good now.
That's great. So we're going to talk about the animal called the fisher. Can you describe what a fisher is to someone who's never seen or heard of one before?
Sure. So I'll start by saying, first and foremost, a fisher is not a bird. Everybody hears that name and they picture a bird, but a fisher is actually a mammal. They're a member of the weasel family, and they're about the size of a house cat. They're dark brown in color, and they live in trees almost primarily. They'll come down to the ground, of course, to hunt, but they're very much an arboreal tree-dwelling species. And they really love to live in kind of the deep forest. The old growth forests is where they primarily make their home. They're found here in the Pacific Northwest. They're also found in other parts of the country, typically in the northern parts of the country. So they are in the Northeast as well, different subspecies. But fishers nonetheless. And they are a pretty incredible animal that most people don't know about because they're just kind of hard to find because they do like to live in the forest, the deep forest, and they're pretty elusive and fairly small. So they can be hard to spot even if you're in their territory.
So what is their role within that forest?
Fishers are what are known as mesocarnivores, which basically means kind of medium-sized carnivores. And so they primarily will hunt small to medium-sized animals. So that could be things like rabbits and squirrels and voles to birds, to eggs of birds if they can find those, to porcupines, to even larger carrion. So they'll, if they find a dead deer or elk or something like that, they'll definitely take that opportunity to have a free meal there too.
Can we talk about the life history of a fisher? Are they solitary? You know, where do they build nests? How do they come across each other? You know, what is their life history?
Sure. So fishers are primarily solitary animal living in those deep forests. And they, as I mentioned before, they're primarily arboreal in nature, living in the trees. They like to nest in tree cavities. So if they can find a snag of a tree, they'll make their nest in there off the ground where it's a little bit more safer and protected. It can be hard for them to find each other because they do live that solitary lifestyle. So they have to range quite a bit to encounter one another. And they're a pretty cool species that, despite their name, they don't eat fish. I should probably mention that. We're not exactly sure why that they have that common name of fisher. There's a thought that it's derived from a French term of fiché, which is kind of what they would refer to the pelt of a polecat, which is kind of a similar species, but that's just kind of it's speculation. We're not quite sure, but yeah.
What's a fisher afraid of in terms of predators?
Well, it's pretty much going to be anything bigger than them. So they are, because they're, like I said, about the size of a house cat, they could be subject to predation from animals like cougars. It's going to be typically your animals that are pretty agile animals because fishers themselves are very agile. So they may not be at much risk to an animal like a wolf because they could outpace and outmaneuver a wolf pretty quickly. But an animal like a cougar or maybe a lynx or a bobcat could be a threat to them, as well as possibly a larger raptor species like an eagle if they were able to come down on one kind of by surprise. Those are kind of the biggest threats in the forest to fishers. But historically, what's been the biggest threat to fishers overall has been humans. And for a long time, fishers were trapped pretty extensively by humans because they have a really thick fur pelt. And so that was a hot commodity for trappers going back into the colonial times, ranging up even into the 18 and 1900s, as well as they're very prone to the impacts of logging because they do rely heavily on those old growth deep forests and those standing snags to make their nesting areas in. When those trees are taken down, that has a big impact on the fisher because that's their primary home.
So Mark, let's talk a little bit about your conservation efforts and your partnerships there at Northwest Trek. Now, how we're linking this to Idaho. Idaho does have fishers and they're not endangered, but our state has designated them as imperiled. And of course, they're only really going to be found up in the panhandle in the small section of Idaho where we really have all the mountains and the heavy forests. There's a good chance that your work there with Northwest Trek is really going to help not only restock, but stabilize the population in Idaho as well.
Yeah, so pretty much any species certainly doesn't pay attention to state boundaries. So they will definitely move to wherever the habitat allows them to do. So any contiguous forest regions that span between Washington and Idaho and into Montana and other areas are certainly prime habitat for fishers. Northwest Trek has been a partner with several agencies who are working on fisher recovery here in Washington, including the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, the National Park Service, other local agencies like conservation organizations such as Conservation Northwest is a big partner on this project. And while most of the fishers have been primarily restored on federal lands, whether they be national parks or national forests, it's a project that has to be a pretty proactive process to restore fishers, because they were basically entirely wiped out from the state of Washington due to those threats of trapping and logging that I mentioned earlier. And the Department of Fish and Wildlife determined that fishers were not going to recover on their own if we just left them to their own devices, because there just weren't enough left. There were hardly any left. And so they had to be imported from elsewhere where there were healthy, viable populations and then released into the forests of Washington. So primarily they were captured from Canada. These agencies partnered with trappers to safely and humanely capture wild fishers from British Columbia and Alberta. And then they were brought into Washington and released in key areas that were considered prime fisher habitat to go off and hopefully propagate their species and continue to flourish over time. And that has involved an extensive tracking program to see that those fishers are doing well, and we've played a big role in that.
We talked earlier about the elusiveness of fishers. How do folks monitor and track fishers in the wild today?
So the fishers that were imported from Canada in the interim process before being released into Washington actually had a surgical implant put in that has a radio transmitter put into it. So it's roughly the size of a small shotgun shell, I'll say, implanted surgically into their body cavity, and then they're able to use telemetry radio tracking devices to figure out where those fishers are. And so those last for about a year before the battery dies, but that's a good amount of time where they can at least know that the fishers are, you know, if they've moved and established territory somewhere, if they're able to identify females specifically, because every transmitter has a unique signal, so they can know which animal they're hearing. And so if they can identify females that have really kind of stopped their movements and isolated themselves in one particular space, that's usually a good indicator that they've established a den there for having babies. And so a lot of times what will happen is we will get those locations on the animals through the radio tracking. And then once we have a specific location, they'll send people in on foot to those areas to set up some remote cameras so that we can hopefully see fishers coming and going and be able to determine if they've been successful with reproducing.
I've got to ask, Mark, have you been able to be boots on the ground and go off into the forest and try to find some of these guys?
I haven't been able to do that. Northwest Trek actually played a big role in sponsoring the tracking flights. That's how you track them through this dense forest. We actually put a plane up in the air with a radio transceiver on it, and then the pilot essentially just flies in big circuits until they pick up a signal, and then they just fly in a really tight spiral to further triangulate that signal. And while I haven't had the opportunity to go up on those flights because seating is very limited, they're very small planes. There's only three seats, one of which is filled by the pilot, one of which is filled by the person operating the radio equipment. That third seat we kind of have put up as a a staff incentive, you know, if you can sign up to win a seat on that for that special experience. And just based on the limited number of flights, I wasn't lucky enough to get picked for that seat, but the footage from it is pretty remarkable, because it is kind of like a roller coaster that once you're up there, they're doing really tight spirals. And that's kind of the warning before you go on the flight, is you have to be able to hold your own stomach wise if you're going to be on these flights, because it can be kind of an intense ride.
And one more thing that the zookeepers get to do that is way more fun than any other job in the world.
Yeah, right. These are the types of things that I think people don't realize, that this is what part of working at a zoo is all about, is not only the work we do with the animals at our facility, but the conservation work we do elsewhere. And that means you get to go out and do some pretty cool stuff.
So can you tell us about some of the results of those conservation efforts, and what work lies ahead in terms of protecting habitat and that sort of thing?
These agencies have been releasing fishers into the wild since 2008. And since that time, more than 250 fishers have been released into Washington State in several key regions. Here, kind of in the South Cascades region, which is where Northwest Trek is located, is one of those, as well as the North Cascades region closer to the northern part of Washington, and then out on the Olympic Peninsula where Olympic National Park is located. Those have been kind of the three main zones that fishers have been released. And in that time, they have had documented success of reproduction in fishers, doing that process that I just explained, where they have set up remote cameras that are triggered by movement, trail cameras, we call them. And they've been able to document a female fisher climbing up a tree into her nest and holding a baby in her mouth. And as well as they've seen others coming and going in some of these too. So that's been like the coolest thing ever to see, when you see these pictures and that it's been successful. They're having their own babies out there. They found each other and the population is growing. And so that's been in several different locations. We've had documented success on that front. And so kind of the long-term goal that we, all the partners in the project, we've reached the original goal of how many animals to release in these areas. But now the long-term goal is to continue to monitor these animals. And so that is, will continue to be these tracking flights in the air, as well as the on the ground operations as we have the locations. And also anytime an animal is found to be deceased, which unfortunately does happen, we're able to locate those animals because their transponder has a mortality signal. When that animal doesn't move for a full 24 hours, it emits a different signal that usually indicates that the animal has died if they haven't moved for a full 24 hours. And so then those animals are, the biologists will locate those animals on the ground and collect them. And then here at Northwest Trek, our veterinary staff is performing the examinations on those animals to learn more about their life. So we can learn, have they been eating successfully? How did they die? That can tell us a lot too. And that's been a lot of different things, ranging from preyed upon by a different animal. Sometimes we've had some that unfortunately had been struck by vehicles, kind of all the different ways that you can experience. But we can also learn about those animals and learn, you know, if an animal that was released early on in the program has died, we know it has lived several years. If the animal has food in its stomach or appears to be in good body condition, we know it's been eating well. So we've been playing a role in that as well, that the Park Service and the Department of Fish and Wildlife are bringing those animals to Northwest Trek to be examined by our veterinary staff too.
You know, Mark, you really do bring up a very important point, in that with your research and the reintroduction process, you do have to look at a deceased specimen. You're releasing them into their historic locations and ranges, but things have drastically changed. And they're not facing the same stressors they did even 30 years ago. And so learning how they're dealing with and compensating for those stressors are just as important as putting live specimens in the ground, on the ground or in the tree for the fisher's sake.
Right. Yeah. One of the biggest points of focus for these projects is not only to just to do the work, you know, not only to just release the animals out there and say, we released the animals, we did our job, but to actually know if we're being successful. You know, we don't want to, you know, this whole project and projects like this for all kinds of species are, they're expensive. They're a lot of work to do. And so we want to make sure that we're actually accomplishing our goals long-term to ensure that this species is being successfully restored and not that we're just releasing them out there and then they're just immediately dying or something. Because if that's the case, we know we need to adjust what we're doing to help the species be successful. And so that's why we want to study these animals for the long term, both while they are being released, while they're living out there, and then once they have died as well, so that we can understand what exactly is going on.
So our trivia question related to the fisher at the start of the show. Fishers are the primary predators of what animal?
So fishers are the primary predator of the porcupine, which is, there's not many animals that can eat a porcupine, but fishers can.
I love this. So can you walk us through how a porcupine is predated by a fisher? That seems like a hard job.
Sure. So fishers are a pretty prickly animal, and in a lot of different ways. But the only place they don't have quills is on their underside, and so they are. So that's really the only place that you can safely access one, and so in that way that you kind of have to get underneath it somehow. But how do you get underneath a porcupine? Well, for a fisherman, they're very agile, active animals, so they can run around in circles and around a porcupine. The porcupine will try and follow them. They get dizzy, they tip over, and that's where the fisher can access them underneath on their belly.
That's awesome. It also goes to show just how smart a fisher is. All right. We want to thank Mark Heisman for talking with us today. To learn more on fisher conservation and all the conservation work that Northwest Trek Wildlife Park is doing, please visit nwtrek.org.
The Nature of Idaho is produced at KISU-FM Studios at Idaho State University in Pocatello. Technical assistance and production by Jamin Anderson and Caitlin Hart. Music is by Idaho's very own Sons of Bannock. Audio of this and all past episodes of The Nature of Idaho can be found at KISU.org. Find The Nature of Idaho weekly podcast on iTunes or Google Play Music. For more information, click on the Idaho logo at KISU.org or send email to noidkisu@isu.edu.